Christine from Nashville, Tennessee. This is Keep Asking, the weekly podcast that helps you dive in a bit deeper and wider into the research providing insights into today's church and culture. Well, I want to say welcome back to everyone who is tuning in to hear the dulcet tones of our voices today. I'm Lizette Beard, and I'm here with my co-hosts, Scott McConnell and Casey Oliver. Today, we're talking about some recent research on worldviews. Specifically, one of the ones is honor and shame. So speaking of honor and shame, guys, now that we've gotten several of these podcasts up and going, tell me how fun it is for each of you to hear your recorded voice when you play back the podcasts.
It never quite sounds like you imagine it.
Nope. I also think, you know, at one point Lizette said, I think we all have stuttering problems. So I don't know what to do with that information, but
I think I said speech impediments.
Okay, fair enough.
Just because when you're listening to it and then reading the transcript, it was a little traumatizing, but if you'll notice, we found a great service that edits our transcripts. So sometimes they don't read exactly. They read a little bit more flowy. But I don't know that I wanted Casey to bring that up. How do you like hearing your own voice?
It gets old in a hurry.
Yeah. I found that it was pretty painful to listen to the first four. And if someone had said, hey, do you want to quit the podcast? I would have been okay with it. But we have some great folks here at Lifeway who are helping us learn how to do this a little bit better. So we appreciate our listeners for hanging in there or jumping in when they knew it was getting better. Either way. So this worldview topic, Scott, it's become increasingly important subject for you. It seems like we've talked about it on several different occasions over the past year or so. What is it about these concepts that has kind of bubbled up or become important for you to want to pursue this in some of our research?
I think there's a couple of things that are going on in the American culture that bring this to the surface. One is we've always been a nation of immigrants, but because immigration has increased in the last couple of decades, there are a lot of people in our American culture today that were born in another culture, and that culture is different. And it's not just a language, it's not just different foods that they eat, but actually how they approach things and what they think is good and what they think is right and the best decisions to make are influenced by that worldview. And that's something that's deep down inside of them. And there's not a right and a wrong to that. And in fact, it's a very American guilt innocence worldview that makes us jump right to that question of are some of those wrong? And no, they're just natural. That's the way they've grown up. And it's something that's been embedded in them throughout their whole lives.
All right. Any kind of big findings, what stood out as the most significant or most important thing we'd want our listeners to pay attention to?
I mean, I think, again, we sort of think of, you know, I think when Scott brought up the different cultural contexts, I think we think of, you know, America, Western society as sort of that guilt innocence culture. But even among Americans, we're seeing, you know, when we ask, which of these feelings do you seek to avoid the most? You know, we're asking guilt, fear, or shame. And 31% say guilt, 30% fear, 38% shame. So shame is still the number one even. And you know, there's a pretty even split between people who are trying to avoid each of those the most.
I didn't check this out, but I'm going to put you on the spot and or look it up. Was there an age difference? Was there anything that kind of separated these out by age?
I don't have it in front of me, but I remember specifically that it wasn't what I thought it would be. I expected the young people to be by far the highest in the shame category because we talk about internet shaming and we talk about sort of that reintroducing itself into Western culture. But I remember it wasn't as tidy, which, I mean, research never is, but it wasn't as tidy as that of that story or narrative. It looks like Scott has it.
No, it turns out that they were higher in the guilt category, which, you know, definitely we put guilt trips on kids as they grow up. But But you're right. You know, in addition to immigration, another reason why we wanted to hit this topic is that it does feel like the American culture is shifting from being simply only focused on who's right, who's wrong, guilt, innocence, to a lot more shame popping in. And as Casey mentioned, the place we see that the most is in social media, where very quickly people will kind of jump on and indicate whether that behavior, that activity, that picture is okay or not. Is that cool or not? Is that we're in your set of friends, and is that acceptable behavior to be one of us?
Do you think it's because they're so exposed that they're maybe becoming numb or less impacted by shame?
I'm not exactly sure the motivation, but obviously we have elements of kind of that shaming mechanism. One of the books we had to read in high school was The Scarlet Letter. So, here's Puritans that clear back, in the beginning of American culture, that was something that they did to kind of say that behavior has brought shame on our not just you, but our whole society. And so that's something that's happened for a long time, and we continue to see it today, and especially among Christians, seeing them kind of jump on and say, what you just did is not acceptable in our group.
Well, and I've actually really loved, as I've preparing for this podcast and even just over the last month, seeing this discussed in various, blog posts and everything like that. I feel like I've had a lot of opportunities to say, oh, this is, I think sometimes we're thinking, oh, this is something like, here's another worldview perspective. But being able to see that through the Bible, or, being able to see that in terms of gospel presentation, how all these different, how that influences, well, how would you meet somebody in that culture, cultural context and best minister to them? But I think one of the things that is interesting to me about that is that it's not like we're trying to find a way to make the Bible relatable to them. It's almost the opposite, where their cultural context is probably closer to a lot of the biblical mm-hmm. writers' cultural context in terms of, not the individualism, legal perspective, but also, and then as I was going through that and having people point out, well, you kind of see that all throughout Scripture, that idea like, well, Adam and Eve, after they sinned, they, it went from them being naked and unashamed to now there's that shame that comes in, along with the fall. And sort of just, I think it's been neat to kind of been able to take a step back. And I know for a lot of our listeners, they probably have maybe some of them have thought about this a lot more already because, they're in a different place. But just for me personally, to be able to see how present that is in the gospel narrative, kind of that worldview as well in terms of what Jesus accomplished on the cross. And yeah.
And there are a number of different frameworks for worldview. This particular one, is one that kind of fits historically, especially in the biblical narrative, that Adam and Eve responded to their first sin by running away. So there was some fear. They're hiding. That's the shame element. And definitely, as they began their conversation with God, they were denying what had happened, which was their response to the guilt they were feeling. And so, My thinking on this has definitely been influenced by an author named Roland Mueller and his book, The Messenger, The Message, and The Community. But I think there is a lot of discussion probably about shame and honor the most, because there are so many cultures around the world where that is the predominant worldview. And so as that begins to infiltrate into American thinking, how we present the gospel, as Casey was saying, and even how we try to get along with our neighbors mm-hmm. is very much influenced by, can we walk a mile in their shoes? And that means we got to think through some of the issues of our day the way they're thinking through them. And again, there's not a right and wrong to think about your group of friends and family first before you think about yourself. Our worldview in America has been so individualistic mm-hmm. that we just assume it's going to be focused on me. But sometimes the reason somebody's doing something is for the good of that group. And even though we might say some piece of their behavior was wrong, it crossed a line individually, it helped the group. And so it's okay.
But you were talking about a book. I know one that I've mentioned to you, Duane Elmer, and his book on cross-cultural conflict, talks about how the American style of, or the Western style of addressing conflict is we really celebrate a very direct manner, and the spectrum that most Westerners will see is very direct. Now, or a complete withdrawal, like I'm just going to be kind of passive aggressive and not do anything. Or I think he has a phrase, care fronting, where it's still very direct, but it's more gracious. And so people will typically land on that. Oh, that's the ideal. But what ties in with this is that there are perspectives of how other cultures do conflict management that are outside of that whole direct interaction, either complete withdrawal or complete confrontation. You know, there's using a mediator, or, you know, gift giving, or, you know, some different things that are regular practices in leadership and cross-cultural conflict, and that get you thinking, oh, sometimes I just have a very narrow, like, how direct am I supposed to be? Sometimes when I'm in a situation, it's like, well, how direct or how indirect? And it's like, there's other ways to handle that, you know? So what else did you guys pick up on this?
I think, you know, just trying to, again, you know, like we talked about, the age perspective wasn't as clear a delineation as you might have expected going to it. I do think we saw some trends there that, maybe were more expected. And so people from other religions, so not Christians and not the nuns, not, you know, atheist, agnostic, no religious preference, people in other religions were more likely to select shame. 48% of those people said shame. So just kind of, again, how our value systems inform what we're thinking about in terms of what we're trying to avoid. I thought that was compelling.
When we asked the question a little differently and asked about their desires in life, we see that the largest group of Americans is definitely focused on themselves, their desire for personal freedom. 40% of Americans gravitate toward that. When we give them two different alternatives, almost a third desire respect, and that element of wanting to be honored, wanting to bring honor to others, you know, comes through for almost a third of Americans. But we see a little more than a quarter of Americans really having a desire in their life to overcome some of the things that are stacked against them. And, you know, we see that shine through in a lot of different settings, whether it's, you know, whether it's the sports player that makes it from a rough beginnings in their life to you know, multimillionaire, you know, the rags to riches story is one that we always latch on to. But the reality is there are a lot of people in the American culture who have a lot to overcome, whether it be economic, whether it be educational, whether it be some injustices that are holding them back. There are a lot of people where that's their mode of thinking on a daily basis. And if that's where somebody's at, you know, when we go to try to serve them with a ministry, if we're not thinking that way, then even how we describe a problem, it is probably not going to relate to them. And so as we go to help, as we go to serve, as we go to try to build solutions together, as a ministry, if we're not thinking the way they think and walking in their shoes and we're not going to connect with them.
What I like about how you just talked about that, I was going to go a different direction on this, but even one of my pet peeves, which I have a few, I mean, we're not going to dwell on a bunch of those, but I don't particularly enjoy when people will teach something as if it's a biblical truth, but it really only works in upper middle class America, you know. And so I think, just as you were talking, I thought, as someone's presenting an idea, a principle, these are good filters to think about if you're casting an idea, a sermon, a lesson. That doesn't mean you have to stop thinking about what's most important to you. But if you think about, does the spiritual truth, you know, how does that speak to the people in here? Because these can be very subjective. These can be caused by either, you know, my instinct is that these can be, you know, cultural if, you know, it seems more American to have the desire for personal freedom, even though we had plenty of Americans choose the others. But I know from living in Ivory Coast, that's just not something you heard people talk about a lot. This personal freedom, even people who were very successful were not trying to get away or separate. They were taking on more responsibility, typically. You know, the concept of solidarity was very strong. And so, but I think if we're just thinking as Americans, if we're trying to think about how other people, even in our own company, are thinking or having a different perspective, I like these as a filter.
Yeah, because they're all still present, even.
Yes.
You know, that's what we see in our society as well.
Yeah, because I would say, I would have guessed the personal freedom would have been higher. You know, if I would have probably expected it closer to 60%. I mean, that's just kind of making it up.
Which is what we do with statistics.
No,
not us. You know, to me, one that we don't talk about very often is kind of this worldview of fear and power, and often it's used to describe cultures where there's a lot more belief in spirits and in spiritual forces and things like that. And so, you know, in the American culture where we tend to be overly rational about everything, there are not a lot of discussions about that. We may jokingly reference to some bad juju somewhere, but we're not. You know, there are not a lot of people whose whole life is controlled by those fears of spirits and things out there. But at the same time, fear can manifest itself in other ways in our culture, mm-hmm. and some of that can depend on where you live. It can depend on you know, some of those outside forces that might be more physical, might be more tangible. You know, whether it be a gang or whether it be a bully or whether it be the big monopoly corporation that's controlling your life or controlling the things in your community. There are a lot of people driven by that. And we saw in the last election, we saw a lot of politicians appealing to those fears because they knew that was the way people were thinking and that the way they were approaching some of the issues in our society today.
Again, bringing up, maybe I just want everyone to know I was a missionary in Africa and that I'll get bonus points. But I remember noticing that that personal freedom, that independence, you know, that is so strong in our culture. Yet comparatively, the spiritual sensitivity, spiritual forces, and talking to evangelical believers, you know, people that would share, I mean, I knew they were believers. We would share so many same beliefs, view of the Bible, but there was spiritual sensitivity and spiritual awareness. And it's not that they were using terms that were perfectly fine, but their sensitivity, their awareness of what is happening was beyond what I could really, even living there 2 years, I just could not mentally or spiritually become that in tune or connect at that same level because it's not where I came from. But what stood out is at times you can be skeptical or you can say, well, this is really controlling. But at the same time, I was observing, you don't see people experiencing loneliness. You don't see people even through really difficult times, depression is not, I mean, and people could be sad, but not that isolated. I remember there was a gal in the church I went to that nobody liked, yet everybody was one of her bridesmaids because that's what you did at that church. When someone got married, everybody was a bridesmaid. And so when she got married, and there were lots of reasons not to like her, but the girls totally were just there. I mean, that's what you do when someone gets married. You put on the dress, you serve the food, you do all of this. And so I thought there's a lot of comfort there in that, you know, going back to the solidarity in that. So thinking about the different perspectives. So that was a little bit of a tangent, but how jarring it is when you're looking at there are other things driving how other cultures are thinking.
And, you know, the beauty of the gospel is that, you know, Jesus Christ addresses all of these. You know, he Absolutely. Removes our fear. He covers our shame. And again, that's both individual and collective shame that sin has brought on mankind. And thankfully, he removes our individual guilt as well. And I think as we try to relate to those around us and understand how they're approaching the issues of our day, you know, hopefully our dialogue will be more healthy, but also hopefully our ability to share the gospel and to minister to them will be more effective.
I want to recommend another resource. Again, I mentioned this a couple of podcasts or in another podcast about the Heath brothers. They also have a book called Decisive and in Decision Making. And they have just some steps. Again, this is a secular book. I'm not trying to superimpose this over the Bible. But in our somewhat volatile climate at times with dialoguing about things in society, they've got some steps to just think, is there a perspective other than your own to be thinking about? Now, their goal in the book is to think about it to help you widen your options to make the best decision. But I think they call it the WRAP process, and it's WRAP, widen your options, which they say narrow framing will cause you to overlook some options. R, reality test your assumption. This goes into the confirmation bias. Are you assuming something? You know, check it out with reality. Just step outside of yourself for a little bit. Attain distance before deciding. That's the A in the WRAP. Short-term emotion tempts us to make choices that are bad in the long term. I really feel like that applies to Facebook for a lot of folks, you know, or people sharing some volatile things there. Maybe before posting something, reacting, commenting. I mean, that's just one place, but attain distance and say, does this need to be said? You know, right now, is this, or is, can someone have a different perspective? And then P, prepare to be wrong. Oftentimes we're overconfident in something that's really not significant. I'm not saying this, use this book and be prepared about everything you believe, but is it possible on an issue that may seem important? Are there other perspectives? Again, the goal isn't to give up all of those. It's to step out and look at a broader picture. What's the other perspective of others? You may come back to the very same conclusion, but I think you have a little bit more richness to the mm-hmm. process. Well, anything else, guys, before we wrap up?
No, I think we covered it.
Good stuff. A lot to think about. And it's pretty exciting to get to think about this and introduce some of this research. Well, we want to thank everybody for listening. We would love your feedback. Please contact us via Twitter at SMacon, at StatsGuyCasey, and at Lizette Beard. If you want to see more of the research that we have released, you can go to lifewayresearch.com. And also, if you have a moment to go in and rate the podcast and give us a review on iTunes, that always helps. Otherwise, we'll catch you next time. Thanks for listening.